wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon, wherever you may be.
Omaha! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello?
Cincinnati.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sports.
All right, guys, welcome back to Sports Access. I am your host, Peter DeFee. Alongside with me, on the other end of my phone, at his house, is Julian Burke. Julian, how are you?
I'm well, man. I'm feeling jelly today. Not jelly like jealous, but jelly like sticking to peanut butter.
Well, I'm glad we're able to come on the air today and give some distractions to people that have otherwise needed them, whether it be the virus, what's going on in the news, with the George Floyd news recently in Minnesota. So we're glad that we can bring a little bit of a distraction into people's lives and just talk sports and kind of get their minds off of things and just relax for the next 45 minutes or so. So we are going to start with some NBA news, as sources from Woj, which is a very respected NBA insider, said the NBA Board of Governors is expected to approve Adam Silver's restart plan on Thursday. And for people that don't know what his restart plan is, basically Adam Silver wants to come back or continue the season or start it back up on July 31st with plans on bringing about 20 to 22 teams, back into the NBA. And it would include teams that are currently within 6 games of the final playoff spots in each conference, which would include New Orleans, Phoenix, Portland, Sacramento, and San Antonio, and would land in Orlando under those guidelines of the 22 teams, with Washington joining as the only other remaining East team within 6 games of the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference. So just looking at that, it seems like they want to try to finish out a little bit of the regular season, see if they can play these last 15 games, if they can get a little playoff hype, but as also, you know, get to the postseason as quick as possible. Is that what you're thinking?
Right. That's exactly where I'm at. The middle ground or the compromise, if you will.
So this report also goes on to say that a proposal for 20 teams remains alive, and that format would include New Orleans, Portland, San Antonio, and Sacramento would be the only teams coming back. And, of course, the West would have a lot more teams coming back, because the West, for some reason, has stayed solid as far as playoff races go. And the East is a little easier to get into. I know we talked about that in the first episode back during the coronavirus. But I know, right, Julian, you and I were talking. I think the reason they're not going straight to the playoffs is because guys like Damian Lillard said, you know, if there's no real way for him to get into the playoffs, he wasn't going to play.
Exactly.
So,
and, you know, with the NBA being the forerunner in the vocalization of players and being almost really like a player-driven league, so to speak, Adam Silver, after hearing that at least, he had to weigh the decision heavily. Because if that's one of your premier superstars in the league saying that, how widespread is this sentiment among other superstars in the league? So that's something you really have to deeply consider.
Yeah, because the way the proposal already states, we were talking about it too before we came on, is you're already going to lose the Warriors with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green, which right, was a big part of getting people to watch games, you know, the last 5 seasons.
Sure.
especially with how good they were. So if you were going to lose Damian Lillard and other stars that followed suit because of the teams not getting a chance to make it to the postseason, that's when the revenue was going to go down. People weren't really going to watch it. They were probably just going to wait till the finals or wait until they saw a Clippers Lakers matchup in the playoffs to start watching.
Yeah.
So this helps them generate a little more revenue, as this report also goes on to say that the NBA and the NBAPA were also trying to be mindful of generating revenue on the resumption of the season, and playing regular season games and playing games will generate more money than simply restarting the season, which
Yes.
you also alluded to, that the NBA has been trying to implement play-in games and kind of experiment with the postseason in years past, and this really gives them a good chance of testing out that theory to see if they want to move on with it for further
Right.
years.
It's almost like they really just needed the right circumstances to really test this thing out. And for lack of better words, I mean, what better circumstance is there to try that than the ones we're in right now, currently? So, it gives the Board of Governors a lot of time to just mull over, to sit, think, strategize, because, as much from a competitive standpoint, we love to watch the game as spectators. It's a business. So that comes first and foremost for the people at the top.
So now, with them going to 22 teams instead of 16 teams, I know
Right.
a lot of the owners were, what's the word I'm looking for? A lot of owners said that they would be in favor of just starting the postseason, not even playing the regular season games. And now with the 22 teams, they're going to be playing regular season games, which now is going to also factor into the lottery. So not only is it going to impact the playoff race right now that we're in, but it's also going to impact the lottery, because teams that, thought they had a playoff spot and the owners just wanted to go straight into the postseason and they were going to be in the postseason, get revenue sharing from that, now they could possibly fall back into the lottery. And I wouldn't be surprised if an eight seeded, I gotta look at the standings here, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody in the eighth seed kind of said, you know what? We're not entirely healthy to make a run like an Orlando Magic or a Brooklyn Nets. Is like, we're not entirely healthy to make a postseason run. Why don't we try tanking these last little few games? Let the Washington Wizards go into the playoffs as the eighth seed, and we'll fall back into the lottery. What's stopping teams from continuing to just go down and, quote unquote, tank to get out of the playoffs and try to get in the lottery pick?
Right. Well, that's another thing that I was reading about in the past few days, that a lot of the formats that they've been thinking about and looking to implement potentially have centered around a theme of trying to de-incentivize tanking altogether. So, the fact that some teams could still heavily consider that, based on whatever format actually comes to fruition when the season does come back, if and when, which is seeming it's seeming kind of imminent, because they're starting to give us somewhat tentative dates for everything. It'll just really make it interesting to see how organizations will strategize, because it may not be so, like you said, cut and dry and straightforward, where it's like, okay, we're in this thing, let's compete. It's about positioning yourself for the following season, because this season, in the minds of the players at least, it almost feels like most teams, it almost feels like it's a scrap, even if they come back and really compete. So I feel like you have to forecast forward. And they're looking toward next season as much or even more so than this season.
I mean, if you look at teams like Memphis Grizzlies, Portland Trail Blazers, the Pelicans, they were building up that momentum, in the middle of the season, especially when Zion came on and played.
Oh, without
Ja
question.
Morant was having a great year.
Without question. And that's really what makes this intermission so difficult, because the season came to a halt due to this pandemic at the time of the season where most teams make a late run. Those borderline teams tend to make a late run, or at least you find out who's who. You find out the teams that are going to crumble when they have a chance to advance and move up in the standings, or and then you see the teams that take advantage of the momentum that they have on their schedule. So, it was a really pivotal point in the season when this happened, right in the middle, or right in that linear phase where the steam starts to pick up going into the postseason. So, that's what made this situation all the more, I guess I'd say, peculiar.
Now they said they were going to bring back only teams that were, within 6 games of the eighth seed. And really, if you think about it, in the West, the Memphis Grizzlies are 7 games back, excuse me, 8 games back of the Dallas Mavericks of that seventh seed. With the Dallas Mavericks are 40-27. If they were in the Eastern Conference right now, they'd be a fourth seed, or excuse me, they'd be a fifth seed behind the Miami Heat. So that just tells you how stacked the Western Conference was this year. But I'm surprised they're not just playing games for the Portland Trail Blazers, New Orleans Pelicans, Sacramento Kings, and Memphis Grizzlies. And they have basically a what an NCAA tournament does with the first four in. So you have your play-in games that usually start the tournament, and then those seeds go on to make the other tournament, the round of 64, while you just start the playoffs with the Eastern Conference, with Washington being 6 games back. I'm really surprised they decided to go to this 20-22 team system and not just start the playoffs and maybe have a set of playing games for the West, since it was so congealed at the bottom.
So you're suggesting really like a single elimination type of thing with those
Yeah,
four teams?
because if the eighth seed in Memphis Grizzlies are 32-33, the Portland Trail Blazers are 29-37. So really, anything could have happened
In those
in
six
that.
games.
Yeah, in those the 10 to 15 games they had left, anything could have happened between the eighth seed in Memphis Grizzlies and really the what is that 8, 9, 10, 11, 12th seed in San Antonio Spurs. Because the San Antonio Spurs were 27-36, so that's 5 games out of the playoffs. Because they're also going to bring back the Suns, who are 6 games out of the spot, out of the eighth seed. So my idea was, why not just bring back the Trailblazers, Pelicans, and Kings, and then you have the Memphis Grizzlies at eight, and then you just have those four teams who are basically 3 to 4 games out of making the eighth seed just play each other. And then the winner of, so say you would have the Kings versus the Grizzlies, the Blazers versus the Pelicans. The winner of those two play each other, and the winner of that game gets the eighth seed and unfortunately has to face the Los Angeles Lakers in the first round. So that was my thought process as far as, okay, these teams might have had a shot to make it into the playoffs with the 15 games remaining. Let them have a chance of playing a one game play-in game, and then they go on to the playoffs and play the best of seven series with or against the Lakers. So because in the East it was basically a crapshoot as far as, who was going to get the seventh and eighth seed, because the Brooklyn Nets are 30-34 and the Orlando Magic are 30-20 and 35. And I really don't want to see a Washington Wizards team that's 24-40 play playing games to make it to the playoffs. We're already looking at two teams under 500 by at least 4 games that are going to be making the playoffs.
And it always seems like the East really comes down to those last few games because like you said, of that disparity, teams two like you said, two teams are below the 500 mark in the playoff race, firmly in there, 7 and 8. And I always cringe when I saw that in the NBA, and it's not really any different for me now. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. If a team like Washington were to get in there, I mean, who's what's to what where do you make a case for them in that race? Is it Bradley Beal putting the whole team on his back again? I mean, it's not really a plausible situation.
Yeah, this was a team that in their last 10 were 4-6 and were on a one game winning streak. So really they were 3-7 before the season halted in their last 10. They're under 500 by 16 games. And it's weird, but NBA is really the only sport that you can make it into the playoffs being so far below 500.
Right.
I mean, the only thing I can remember with football is that the Seahawks made it 1 year at 7-9, but
Yes.
they lost the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's when I think that was a year or two before Russell Wilson and before the Rams got Jared Goff and were really any good.
Sure.
And before, you know, who else is in that division? The Rams, Seahawks, Niners, and there's one other. Who am I missing?
The Cardinals.
Cardinals. That was when, oh my gosh, who was the starting quarterback for the Cardinals?
What year are we talking about?
It was like 2011, I
Was
think,
it?
because Matt Hasselbeck was the quarterback for the Seahawks,
It
and
was
they made it
either
when they were like 7-9.
Kurt Warner or Carson Palmer, if I remember correctly.
I think it was Kurt Warner because I think he was on his way out of the league, and this is before they got Carson Palmer. And that division was just terrible. But that's the only other time I can remember somebody being under 500 making it into the playoffs, other than basketball, who consistently has teams 5, 6, 7 games under 500 in the playoffs.
Last season, if I remember correctly, last season I don't believe it was that way. Yeah, you had Detroit right at the cusp. They finished the season 500 at 41-41. So,
And that I can take,
no, most definitely.
because you at least have the teams that are under 500 not in the
Just
playoffs.
be 500 or above, make it an in. That's what's credible to me. That works for me.
Because last year the Clippers made it in at 48-34.
In the eighth seat.
They were, yeah, they were 14 games above 500 and were battling for the eighth seed.
Right. But then you got to see also, this is where it balances out. In that ninth seed, Sacramento was right there on the outside looking in. They're 9 games back. So that's where it kind of balances out there. The disparity of games from merely the eighth seed to the ninth seed, whereas in the east, I mean, Charlotte was a couple games from sneaking in there. They tailed off. They finished their season on a losing one game, and they were 6-4 in their last 10, while ironically Detroit was 4-6 in their last 10, finishing on a 2-game winning streak. So it was that close. It was literally that close. Whereas, like I said, in the west, although the Clippers, that 48-34 finishing at the eighth seed as opposed to 41-41 in the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference, that 9-game drop off really speaks to how the West kind of tapers off outside of that playoff picture there.
Yeah, it just amazes me because I'm looking back at some of the Eastern Conference standings a little bit. And even 2 years ago,
Wow.
you had a Washington team that was 43-39. So
Four
even
above,
that's
yeah.
acceptable.
Without
But it's
question.
just funny to me how
Excuse me.
the Eastern Conference, let's look. Let's see. 40 at 41-41, the Chicago Bulls made the playoffs. They wouldn't have even made the postseason in the Western Conference in the 16-17 season. So it amazes me how constantly the basketball season is dictated by teams under 500 and not teams over 500. And I don't know if there's any way to really fix that disparity in both leagues. I know there's a lot more, I would say, high valued teams in the West than there are in the East, because I don't know a whole lot of teams that want to go to Charlotte, but I know a whole lot of teams that want to go to Dallas now. So there's a lot of high there's a lot more high profile teams in the West that a lot of free agents are going to be attracted to.
Sure.
It's about, you still got Golden State.
It's really about the marketability of the cities too, Pete. I think that's really what you're alluding to as well. And that seems to kind of spread like wings in the Western Conference. Whereas you have the few powerhouses in the East. I mean, the Cleveland Cavaliers were carried by, you know, the brandability and the marketability of LeBron James for years and years. Outside of that, Cleveland's not a, that's not a marketable city. I mean, you look at Boston, you have Chicago, you have New York, who they've been down in the dumps and just a moribund franchise for years and years, haven't been able to get it together. And you have Philadelphia. Those are like the four big time, big market franchises in the Eastern Conference. Whereas in the Western Conference, you got the Houston Rockets, who have premier marketable players now in Russell Westbrook and James Harden. Solidified, bona fide superstars in Houston. Golden State just got a new arena, Chase Center. They moved to San Francisco. Changes the market of even the demographics, the people who are paying for your tickets in your new arena. You got both LA teams as a two-headed monster now. You have a Dallas team who's up and coming again and emerging. These are cities. It's the cities and the players. So, like you said, Pete, and that's why free agency is so heavily scrutinized and highly looked at when that time comes, because we're seeing who's going to trade where they've been drafted for where they can make their name.
Exactly, and I think that's why you see so many Eastern Conference guys that get drafted by Eastern Conference team. Look at Giannis. He's had, since he's had his coming out party, he's had these free agency rumors towards Golden State.
And Golden State.
Since he started playing great. I can't tell you how many times I've read, rumor has it that Golden State's going to make Giannis an offer that he just can't
that he can't turn refuse. Down. Yeah.
So, I mean, you look at what happened with Kawhi Leonard. He could have stayed in Toronto and they could have been another finals contender, but he decided to go back to the Western Conference in LA and team up with Paul George. Look what Paul George did.
That's a prime
He was
example.
In Indiana. He got traded to the Western Conference and has stayed there ever since. Even though in the Eastern Conference with Indiana, he was a perennial MVP candidate and finals
contender to make it there.
I mean, you see what LeBron James did. He played in the East all his life, and now he goes to the Western Conference.
LeBron kind of had a unique situation, though, because he was a generational talent. So wherever he was going to play, the team was going to have success, astronomically so. And we've seen how he's carried teams that really shouldn't have done much outside of him. But him moving to the West was strictly, wholly, without question, a business decision at this point in his career. So,
and I think the fact that he landed in LA, the bright lights of Hollywood, Los Angeles are gonna help you build your business. Which he's had plenty of businesses that have taken off. I mean, we've seen on HBO The Shop. What is it called? Unscripted?
Uninterrupted.
Uninterrupted on HBO. He has his friend Maverick Carter, that's a big business guy that was in LA that he's worked with. So there's that business aspect too that goes into, there's not a whole lot of business opportunities in Indiana.
Right.
Not a whole lot of business opportunities in Orlando.
Right.
Or Charlotte, for that matter.
Right.
But there is business opportunities in Los Angeles. There's business opportunities in Utah and Denver, big cities like that. Houston, Dallas, who's run by somebody that's on Shark Tank in Mark Cuban.
Yeah, their owner. Another thing to steadily pay attention to as well is there are states in this country that they just house powerhouse cities. like if you look at the Western Conference, a majority of the teams that you have there, they're monopolized by maybe two or three states. California has four professional NBA teams. Texas has three. That's seven teams right there out of 15 teams in the conference. That's almost half. With two states, just Texas and California.
Yeah, so that also goes a long way into, like how you were saying earlier, the marketability of a team.
Without
They can say, hey, we have the most NBA franchises. We know how to run a franchise. We're one of the more successful franchises, and we've been here the
right.
longest.
It's almost as if you could say NBA players survive off of their contracts. No, they live off of their contracts, but they survive off of their endorsements. So that's why you see a lot of the shifts that we see, especially in the last few years. And I can speak to it as a fan, as a spectator, as a lover of the game, or even I can speak to through the lenses of a casual NBA watcher. It's more appealing when you see guys switch teams all the time. That's why free agency has become such a prime time tune in for people who watch the NBA and enjoy it. So it's really become a spectacle, so to speak.
And it's funny that you actually said that you enjoy watching people switch teams because I'm the complete opposite. I'd rather
Well, I
watch,
don't I,
somebody like Giannis stay with the team than.
I'll admit that it's exciting. I'm not saying necessarily that I like it. I'm like I said, I'm a proponent of traditionalism, and that even extends to how you treat an organization, how an organization treats you. That's why I commend the Damian Lillards of the world, who, I mean, he's so to speak, he's put his money where his mouth is. He's had opportunities to leave. He signed an extension with Portland to stay. And that's really big for those smaller market teams when your premier guy says, no, I'm in this thing for the long haul. Like I have a high regard and respect for that. And also what you're doing is you're looking out for the parity of the league, which is something that fans had such a gripe with and such an issue with when the Warriors went through their short or what felt like an eternity in time of dominance for those 4 or 5 seasons. I'm not a fan at all of teaming up, of superstars teaming up to build big threes, big fours, dynasties. I'm not a fan of that. But I am of the mindset that if it happens and you're a team who's on the short end of the stick in that regard, don't complain, don't whine, build your franchise better, because all it does now is it presents a greater challenge for you to move your franchise back up to the upper ranks. That's all it is to me. That's how I would attack it as a general manager and as an owner.
And I think what got us just piggybacking off of your super team thing, that the reason I think we got so mad with the Warriors is because they had drafted and built and developed all these great talents. Steph Curry was coming to his own. He had just won the MVP. Klay Thompson was, the second part of the Splash Bros. You had Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala. They had built this team from the draft and from key free agent pickups of Matt Barnes, and then you just go and sign a Kevin Durant, which, now don't get me wrong, the Warriors would have been stupid not to offer Kevin Durant a contract. So I don't think you can be mad at the Warriors for offering him a contract, because I think every single team in the NBA offered him a contract. It was just the fact that they had just come off winning a championship, and then they lose. Or they came off the 73-9 season where they lost the championship, and then you add probably one of the best scorers in the league right now in
I
Kevin
mean, you got
Durant
five
and just go
appearances.
on this absolute
You got
tirade.
five straight finals appearances, and you win 4 out of 5. I mean, yeah, you're gonna throw the money at Kevin Durant, but if he leaves at that point, you've really solidified how your franchise is viewed now. And that is.
And I think that's where the rumors of the Giannis's to Golden State are coming from, is because everybody now knows that Golden State's going to go after these big name free agents that doesn't care what their perception is, as long as they're
Exactly.
winning.
It's about the results. Because you can't deny the results that they've had in the last 4 or 5 seasons. And you made a great point, Pete. They built this thing from the ground up. Why, as fans, were we upset with that? They didn't cheat the system. They did it organically. And then when they add one superstar, it's like we're up in arms about it. If anything, take that blueprint and be meticulous and be detailed. Be serious about building your team up from the ground up. That's why I value the draft so much. The thing about the draft that makes it difficult is the talent pool fluctuates every season, every year. It's not the same level of talent, and it's not the same depth of talent from draft to draft. Like, you look at this draft coming up right here. I read something jokingly that it said, you know, how will we remember this COVID class or something like that. But it's not a particularly talent-rich draft, in my personal, honest, humble opinion. There's guys that you may covet because you may have a positional need, or you may have a guy who can advance your franchise based on the pieces you've already placed or the pieces you have in place. But there's not a Zion Williamson, so to speak. There's not a Ja Morant. There's not a Luka Doncic. There's not even really a Trae Young, so to speak. But it's tough to peg. That's why scouting is so important, and all these different facets of the organization have to give their all. And you got to make sure you're hiring the right guys. So.
Well, yeah, but then also real quick before we move on to NCAA news, just to go back onto your endorsements, Forbes released the full list of the 2020 highest paid athletes, and LeBron James, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant were 5th, 6th, and 7th, respectively, with LeBron James making $60 million off of endorsements. Almost, not almost. He actually is doubling his money through endorsements than he is making during his salary or with his salary. He's making $60 million in endorsements and $28.2 million in salary. So that goes to show you how marketable not only these teams are, but these players are, and that's what's attracting right. these free agencies.
Pete, do you know if endorsement money is taxable?
That's a good question. I can look that up real quick, but I wouldn't. I don't know why it wouldn't. I mean, I would think it would be just like,
or maybe at a similar rate.
Here, I just found a. We're gonna have a little business segment on this show. Let's see. How do athletes pay taxes for endorsements? Yeah, I mean, they say it says here that typically the U.S. athlete will set up an entity in a tax-friendly or resident state and have the endorsements paid to the entity. Typically, this will be an LLC or an S corporation. For all the smart people or smarter people listening to this show, I'm sure they know what that is, but I have no idea what that means.
Right.
And I mean, this one says, is it income? ? Yes. So they have to pay taxes.
Okay.
If they have scheduled paying taxes as a contact employee and their assumption of income included the endorsements, they send in their payment. So I mean, to answer your question, it should be taxable. I mean, I would think it's taxed to a certain extent, but I'm not making $60 million in endorsements, so I don't know how LeBron James sets that up.
Yeah, point taken.
But moving on to NCAA, Power Five conferences have asked Congress to not wait for the NCAA to make a decision on their NIL legislation. And for people that don't know what NIL stands for, it's name, image, and likeness, which in this article by Brandon Marcello on 247sports.com said, commissioners from the Power Five conferences filed a letter to congressional leaders May 23rd asking for the federal government to not wait for the NCAA process to conclude before moving forward with a national legislative plan, allowing players to profit off of their names, according to the three-page letter obtained by 247 Sports. So he also goes on to say that the letter is something of a warning flare from the autonomy five, or the Big Five, ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, and SEC.
Right.
As it seeks guidance and guidelines without full consultation from the heads of those who enact and enforce collegiate legislation, the NCAA. It also goes on to say, this paragraph says, it might also signal yet another blow to the NCAA, which has seen its power dwindle in recent years amid conference realignment and the consistent poking from commissioners to tweak or write new legislation. So right off the bat, I'm thinking, the commissioners of the Big Five schools have heard the complaints of the students as far as, you know, wanting to make money off of autographs, wanting to make money off of when the NCAA video games were big, wanting to make money off of their jerseys being sold, because I don't know if people know this, they sell jerseys with the numbers, but they don't sell them with the names. So, you know, before, you know, when I was younger, I got a Florida State jersey that had the number 3 on it. I knew that was EJ Manuel, but it didn't have the word Manuel on the back of the jersey. So he couldn't profit on his likeness.
It almost feels different when you're wearing it too, doesn't it? That the name isn't on the.
Yeah, because I mean, I've grown up my whole life with a name on the back of my jersey because that was my favorite player. Like, I have a Scott Kazmir jersey that has Kazmir on the back, even though that's a professional athlete. But it just, there's something about seeing a jersey that's supposed to have the name on the back and not having it. And you're like, oh, that kind of weird. Like there's no, yeah. So the Big Five, ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, and SEC are really trying to vie for their players, which, again, leads me to think that they've heard the complaints of players. And I know people are going to come out and say, oh, they get a scholarship, you know, that should be enough for them. But, you know, for people that don't know, and I'll use baseball, for example, because I know more about the scholarship system for baseball. There's 11.5 scholarships that can be given out to a 30-man baseball team. So not every single player is getting a full ride scholarship. And I think for football, I think 25 scholarships given out for an 85-man roster. So not everybody is on full scholarship like they think they are. It's usually partial scholarship that ends up being maybe if a year is, say, 20,000, a kid might be getting 5 or 6,000 paid for. And the rest he has to take out loans for, the rest he has to work for to get paid. So all these people go and, oh, they get scholarships. They should, you know, that should be all they want. Like, they're not getting full scholarships. They're not always getting their tuition fully paid for. So I think this NIL legislation that the Power Five groups are bringing to the forefront of Congress, I think, is going to really help those college athletes, which I think should be paid. Excuse me, should be paid in some capacity, whether that be, you know, give them an extra $100 for meal money during the week. You know, if they have their jerseys sold, give them, you know, 5% of the profits, because I'm sure a Tua Tagovailoa jersey was one of the highest selling Alabama jerseys. So give him 2 to 5%, and he'll probably make an extra $1,000 that can help him pay for housing, pay for food, pay for whatever. So I think this is going in the right direction as far as being able to get college right. athletes paid. Now, you said before we came on that you were reading something that Reggie Bush said about athletes
yes,
getting paid.
Yes, I have it pulled up here. Reggie really had an adverse or an oppositional standpoint to it. He wasn't in favor of it. And I really think for him, it was bigger than just the money itself or the due diligence being given to the players, because they do play and they're made, money is made off of them, but they're not allowed to receive compensation from and by themselves even. But really, he was coming from a standpoint of players with those opportunities, especially in Division 1A football, because it's a completely different tier than the lower levels, which is another thing that we touched on before we jumped on live today. The guidance factor is really huge. Everybody may not even be afforded the same opportunities to have advisors or people of fiscal knowledge and understanding to really take you under their wing and be like, don't do this here, wait on that here. Like, and you have to really consider the backgrounds of a lot of players too. They've never seen large or even ample amounts of money like that. So first instinct to your mind is going to be more than likely to do something with the money that either isn't smart or it's a rash and a hastened decision that may result in later issues and the destruction of either your image or your financial stability in some way, shape, or form. So I think that's really where Reggie was coming from with that. But I will pull up the title and the quote real quick.
But just to piggyback off of you real quick while you're looking that up, too, I think what you're saying with the financial advisors, I think that's what you'll see. Just like teams have hired on, you know, trainers and team chaplains. On the show. But I think a team like an Alabama that's going to get a lot more money for their program, you know, team like Clemson, I think you'll see them hire on financial advisors that are going to speak to the players that, you know, as much as they're not probably going right. to make as much as professional athletes, obviously, even with them making whatever right. money they're going to make, I think you're going to see financial advisors get hired on to speak to these athletes about, you know, maybe investing in stocks, investing in businesses, you know, how to save their money so that way when they're done playing college football or college baseball or college whatever, that when they go into the real world, whether they get drafted or not, they still have that money saved up, especially for the freshmen and sophomores that are going to be there for 3 or 4 years. You know, teach them how to start saving to where they get in the real world, they have that money saved up, so now they can go buy a house, buy a car, be able to live comfortably. And if they get drafted, then they have that money to save and spend while they save and invest their salary that they got for getting drafted. So I think that's when you'll see the shift in momentum for NCAA teams to make sure that they have people that can advise college athletes what to do with that money.
Right. And as far as where we are right now, we're really seeing the disparity in the infrastructure that some programs are not afforded the ability to build up. Like you said, having those resources to hire staffing, hire advisors that are going to help elevate a player and help build up his namesake and retain his financial security. Those things are, you know, one of those factors that just kind of lurks in the shadows. Most of us don't really think about too deeply, but I have the Reggie book quote up. I'm reading here. It says, Bush said that if he had the proper financial knowledge early in his coaching career, some things could have been different for him. So he's coming from really a place of experience, obviously. We know his tenure. We know his time at USC, winning the Heisman Trophy Award. He had some success there, and he had quite a bit of success in the pros. He said guidance is the one thing that young athletes coming through the college system miss on so much. He said he missed on it. He said they're about to start paying college athletes, so he's really confident that this thing is coming to fruition. This is something that has never been experienced before, and it's going to destroy, there it is, some people if their foundation is not in the right place. So it's really, like I said, it's really coming back to your upbringing and your background, how you were brought up, the circumstances you come from. That stuff is highly contextual.
And that goes back to what I was saying as well, is that you'll start seeing college teams get those advisors, get those guys that can help players build that foundation to where, you know, Reggie Bush says they're not getting destroyed mentally and with their foundation that they've already set with the help of these advisors. So right. it's definitely interesting to see how much momentum this has gained throughout the last, you know, year and a half, because before that, you know, there was the, oh, college athletes should get paid, but it was kind of like brushed off because we thought, well, they got scholarships, so, you know, what does it matter? There were, you know, why do they need to get paid off of their image and likeness when they're getting free schooling? But now we've right. seen how much momentum this whole battle between, you know, the NCAA higher ups with the likes of Mark Emmert, and, you know, I don't want to say the lower guys, but the teams, the conferences, you know, how much of a battle they've gone through to try to get their athletes paid now.
For sure. And another good thing that I'm reading here, still on the quote of Reggie, he said, he hired good agents, he hired a good team, but he allowed that good team to make decisions for him. And he said, that doesn't mean he's going bankrupt, but he said, if I had the proper knowledge back then, some things would be different. So it's really about getting to a place where you can take fiscal autonomy over your own life and over your own well-being. You can hire the advisors, but advice is not rulership, it's counsel. So you still have to... You have to maintain authority and gravity of your own situation in there, because people will take advantage of you, even people that you've brought in-house. So he goes on to say, because now you're an open target for a lot of people. It's a nasty world out there, and it's about to get nastier. You're going to really start seeing the true colors of a lot of people, a lot of businesses as well. You're going to see people doing some crazy stuff to make money because our market is crashing. And that's really where he's coming from on that. I really understand that.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the examples of or the example of the big baller brand and how they're, I don't remember his name, but he was like the CEO of the company, was stealing money.
What was this man's name?
I could look it up, but I mean, you could see how letting the wrong people into the company can alter what happens, because now the big baller brand kind of dissolved. You know, Lonzo's not wearing the shoes anymore. He got his tattoo covered up. I can't. Charles Looney, was that the guy that was stealing the money?
No, that wasn't.
But anyways, you know, what Reggie Bush is saying about having counsel and about having the right guys in, we've seen that so many times where athletes think their financial advisors are helping them when really the financial advisors are stealing more money than they're helping the athletes make. And
right.
And it's caused so many athletes to go broke. Alan Foster, that was his name.
Yeah. I was just about to say it.
Alan Foster. He was a longtime friend of the Ball family and the co-founder of Big Baller Brand. And he stole an excess of $2 million from the business and personal accounts. So, I mean, that's just one example of many that we've seen where athletes have been taken advantage of when it comes to their finances. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how the Power Five of the NCAA can move Congress into getting this. Cause I know somebody, I was reading in this article, the power conferences want uniformity with this legislation in most states, and they want the legislation to pass before the summer of 2021, which I don't think it'll pass that soon, but it's definitely gaining traction to where if it's passed by 2021, you're looking at the class that's going in 2022, 2023, you're looking at them being the first class to get paid for playing college athletes, which I wish this would have happened a little sooner so I could have got paid playing college ball. But, you know, I like to see other people eat. But other than that, that's really all the sports news that was going on for today. Really kind of a slow week as far as sports. Nothing really gained traction with the NHL, as we stated last week, that their 2014 playoff kind of play-in situation tournament is off the ground, and they're going to try to start that in July. NBA is coming back July 31st, or at least going to try to come back July 31st with 20 to 22 teams. But other than that, not a whole lot of traction, or not a whole lot of momentum with
– not a lot of development on the NFL as of
yeah, recent NFL's either, kind right? of just sitting still because they really don't have to start until September. I know OTAs were supposed to start sometime this coming month in June, but I mean, they already had their draft. I know basketball is skipping or missing their draft. I know baseball, really the only big development is that they went from 40 rounds to 5, and it's going to hurt a lot of the high schoolers coming out and a lot of the college guys that are maybe draft eligible, but would have kind of slipped to that, you know, middle of the draft. So now they're probably just going to get signed as a undrafted free agent. But other than that, talks have stalled with baseball. They, you know, guys like Max Scherzer have come out and said, you know, there's no need to discuss any other pay cuts because the owners already agreed on a 50-50. The players said, yes, let's do it. We'll play half of the season for half of our money. And then the owners kept coming back with, okay, now we want a 77% reduction. And then at one point it was like an 80% reduction. And the players are just like, you know what? No, there's no need to try to negotiate anymore. So talks have kind of stalled out with the MLB. I know they were trying to get things started back June 1st, which is Monday. But other than that, Nothing else really in the sports world to talk about.
Yeah.
So, we're kind of done with the show. It's kind of a shorter show than we have been last time. Remember, you can follow us on Axis Sports on Instagram. You can also follow us at @the_sportsaxis on Twitter. You can follow me at @Peter_DeFeed Jr. on Instagram and Sportscaster Pete on Twitter. We're going to try to –
and you
go ahead, Julian. My bad. Let me let you plug in before I finish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just to throw my little plug in there as well. You can follow my personal account on Instagram at JewOML. That's JewOML on Instagram.
So we're going to try to post some more stuff on Instagram, but with nothing really going on, there's not a whole lot we can post on Instagram and on Twitter. But Remember, you can find this podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts: Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can search us up. And Julian, what did we just bring him into?
The spin on everything they want to be.
We'll have
in.
Another show on.
Everyone stay safe and just be well in this time. It's a pleasure to be before you all again.
Yeah, we'll have another show on Saturday around the same time. And hopefully we'll have some more sports to talk to you. But Julian, as always, always great talking sports with you. And we'll talk to you next week.